You're listening to Sacks in the Basement, a production of the Broadcast Basement Limited, where every show is 30 minutes of good and comes from a basement bar on the south side of Chicago. Pull up a stool, pour a cold one, and join us right now for Sacks in the Basement. Heard everywhere podcasts can be found, and always at sacksinthebasement.com. I'm going to kick off this show with a shout out to One More Bucket. That's the name of my bowling team. We're in the middle of March Madness with basketball, Ed, and we're also in the middle of a massive tournament in my men's club bowling league for the kids' school here on the South Side. Most Holy Redeemer men's club bowling. 16 teams entered. We were the 16th seed after the regular season because of how bad we were. And we are on a Cinderella run now. Going to the championship game on Tuesday.
Look at you, Cinderfella.
Cinderella run. The 16 upset the 1 in the first round, beat the 9 in the next round. I think we beat the 4 or the 5, however it lined up in the semifinal. I don't know what they were exactly ranked. And now into the finals. So a shout out to my team, because they keep going, when are you going to mention it on the podcast? And, I've mentioned it now. So, yeah.
Well, and now you guys are just going to roll nothing but gutters next time because
probably.
You mentioned it and broken the streak of not mentioning it, which is probably what was keeping you guys going on the Cinderella run in the first place. Way to go, Chris.
I've totally cursed the entire thing.
But, well, yeah, that happens. Yeah.
So, but anyway, I'm excited.
You don't talk about a perfect game in the middle of a perfect game.
Right, exactly. And I've just kind of talked about our 16 seeds run all the way to the championship game. So we'll probably be eliminated post-haste. But it was fun to get there. It's been a blast throughout the entire thing. We got to the championship game in a tie 1-1 series in the third series. I can't believe I'm talking about bowling on this show. And your boy here went up and went strike 9 in the 10th frame. And then suddenly we had the lead. And then the better bowlers behind me held the lead and we won. So I'm not taking credit for the win. I'm just saying I had something to do with it.
But yeah, so you were there.
Yeah,
you
I participated. My name would go on the trophy if they end up winning the entire thing. Meanwhile, there's new food options at the ballpark. Did you see that?
Oh, yeah. There's a bunch of stuff you're not going to eat this year.
Yeah, what do they have? What do they have listed that you can see that I'm never going to find at the ballpark? Because every year, there's like, guess what we have? The pretzel dog. And I never found a pretzel dog. If I found a place that sold it, it was sold out by the third inning. So what have you seen that I'm never going to find in the ballpark this year?
Well, there's a crispy chicken sandwich, which looks rather fast foodish that you'll probably be able to get your hands on. I don't think that's going to be too popular of an item.
No, that's not over the top. They had a Nashville hot last year you could get in the 300 level. I got my hands on that one. So that's not exciting. Is there anything exciting?
Well, there's a Jack and Coke float, which actually sounds interesting.
Okay.
So that's going to be a boozy Coke float. That's got potential. You'll never find that.
Yeah.
There's a Smash Burger. So that I think is going to be...
What's the difference? What's the difference between a burger and a Smash Burger? They smash it?
So they smash it down. So what happens is it's a much thinner patty. It's much crispier finish to it. You can't get them like medium. They're always going to be basically well done. So it's going to be a really like thin, crispy burger. Usually they stack two of them with a bunch of cheese and stuff like that. The pictures look tasty. It's a 300 level item.
Okay, so you're telling me at some point I will be looking for the Smash Burger and I'm going to have a conversation with somebody where I say, okay, you don't have the Smash Burger. I can't find the Smash Burger anywhere. Can you just smash my burger real quick for me? Like that's going to happen this year to me. That's what you're telling me?
Right, you're going to go up to the grill where they're selling the hot dogs with a standard hamburger, and you're just going to be like, can you smash this bastard
smash
for me?
I'm sick of looking for this thing.
Just smash my cow real quick here.
Here's the deal. There's one thing I know for sure, and this is why I eat before the game. I get over to Cork and Carry at the park at 33rd and Princeton in the shadow of the ballpark where they have an award-winning menu of burgers and ballpark favorites that they always have. That I never have a doubt when I'm going there and I'm getting a burger that the burger I want is going to be there. Like they have the one with the avocado on it and the chorizo and that cheese.
Yeah.
I love that burger. Okay. And I don't have to go searching for it. It's sitting at 33rd in Princeton. They have the fully stocked bar with all the options, the rotating craft beers. You get all the local breweries and the big guys and all that stuff. Everything is there. Great wait staff. Food's awesome. Price is better. And I go and I pregame there. I bring the kids over there. That's great. Afterwards, It's a party at 33rd and Princeton. Cork and Carry at the park. See more at corkandcarry.com. Okay.
Now, you know what the irony is? There's one new food item that I imagine you will be able to find anywhere and everywhere. It's the Impossible Hot Dog.
Who wants that?
I don't know who wants it, but you're going to be able to find it, even though it's the impossible one. So,
look, I'm sure there's somebody out there that's like, I've always wanted to have a ballpark hot dog, and I can't because most likely personal choices, so you could actually have one if you chose to.
Right.
And that person now is excited about the impossible hot dog. I'm excited I can get to the 100 level now and get the hot dogs with the onions.
Oh, yeah, that's a huge thing. Yeah.
I remember having that conversation last year with the guy who was actually in charge on the 300 level. I'm sorry I forget his name. Nice dude. I really hope that talking to me and me relaying that I talked to you isn't going to get you fired. But I, like that guy was a great dude, and I was talking to him one day, and I said, the reason why I want to get down to the 100 level again, and I should be able to walk down there, is I can't get the grilled onions. I can't get that thing where they put it on the flat top. It tastes different down there on the 100 level. They char that dog. That dog's got black around.
Yes,
right. I mean, like, they got the they're grilling it in the onions. They don't do that everywhere in the park. I'm not going up to the regular concession stand to get my dog. I'm going to the ones that are sitting there in the carts where the line is gone, and as you walk up, you better order it right or they're gonna look at you funny. Like, that's where I want to get my dog at the ballpark. And that's why I'm most excited about the fact that now everybody in the ballpark can meander their way down to the concourse or go get that hot dog, because it really wasn't available anywhere else, that style of hot dog, except for on the 100 level when you were walking around. That's an item that I travel for in the ballpark to go and find, and that's my kind of hot dog.
Well, and that's, I mean, really, when you want to talk about the White Sox ball game going fan experience, isn't it walking into the park and being greeted by those carts, right? By the smell of the hot dogs and the grilled onions? Because that's when I feel like I'm at a game, right? When I walk in and I'm like, there's that whiff. And then, you know, like 2 feet later, you're like, and there's some of the humanity that I'm here with. There's that whiff. But that's anywhere you go in public, right? So it's not really a criticism.
I could smell the ballpark right now as we're talking.
Oh, and
we're
my gosh, couldn't you?
We're close to opening day because Aloy Jimenez is day to day. So, I mean, we know we're getting close to opening day when Aloy Jimenez is day-to-day with something. He's got a foot.
He's got a foot. He bruised his foot. I didn't even have to bother to read how he bruised his foot. He either got hit by a pitch, fouled it off himself, or was taking a shower.
Something
like,
freakish.
There's nothing.
Something freakish is
causing
it.
He put his feet up to watch some TV last night, and he just, you know, one heel hit the other foot, and there we go.
What do you think is the biggest problem right now? I think one of the bigger problems going into the season is a Dominic Fletcher problem. A guy I was really excited when he went out and got. And you look at all of his numbers, and you look at what he did in the short time that he had in Arizona, and you think to yourself, here's a guy who could really do something with the bat and play some good defense, and we're not seeing him do anything with the bat in the spring. Now, I don't know if spring results are going to matter very much. Corey Lee, who we talked about on the last show, we were like, if you're going to pick a backup catcher, this guy earned a spot on the team, and I want to say within 12 hours of us releasing that episode, he was sent to AAA.
Corey Lee gets sent down, which is where, I mean, he's going to play every day. You know, and I understand a little bit of that. Dominic Fletcher, I think he'll be fine. I think if you get him out of spring training and trying to win a job and being really, you and I have hit on this before, where with Arizona, he's not really competing with Corbin Carroll and Lourdes Gurriel and Alec Thomas and the guys that are in front of him, Jake McCarthy, Pavin Smith. I mean, there was a ton of guys in front of him. He's just out there swinging the bat, playing the game, having fun. He walks in here. He's anointed by Chris Getz. Hey, we traded specifically for this guy to take over the big gap we got in right field, that we're not happy with Gavin Sheets, the incumbent. We're not happy with Oscar Colas, who is the prospect. We don't really have anybody there, so we want this kid to do it. That's a lot of pressure. And kind of like Drew Thorpe coming out and just absolutely getting hosed in his debut for the White Sox, these are human beings who are able to succumb to pressure. I'm pretty sure Drew Thorpe was probably sitting there going, all right, everybody in Chicago is going to hate me because they just traded Dylan Cease for me. And, you know, ignoring Stephen Wilson and Samuel Zavala and Jairo Iniarte. But, he come out and he's pushing, he's pressing, because his numbers in spring training don't mirror anything he's done in the minors, don't mirror what he's done in the majors when he had
if you look at it right now, he's got 19 strikeouts to 6 walks and only 46 at bats. That's not who Dominic Fletcher is. There's nothing in his career that's suggesting to me that that would be that much of a disparity with him or a guy that would hit 152. He's clearly pressing. And, you know, look, here's the thing. On one hand, I understand it, right? Like, oh, he's pressing. You know, maybe this kid is just in his head a little bit. It's just spring, and they're going to go out there and start him. On the other hand, I always worry about guys that do that because this is a very complicated sport.
Well, let me tell you, Chris, what isn't complicated is Window and Door Superstore of Oak Forest. Exterior windows, doors, patio doors, and storm doors. No high-pressure sales. They are not in your kitchen. You are in their showroom with full examples and glass designs on display. There's not going to be any pictures in a book. You get to see everything in person in real size. The owners themselves are in the showroom and at the site. All Window and Door Superstore installers are in-house guys, okay? They don't farm out the work. 40 years in Oak Forest since 1985. All major brands custom made for a perfect fit. Half block east of 159th and Ridgeland at 6280 159th Street or always at windowdooroakforest.com. Well, look, you're worried about the mental acuity, which is why they've got guys like Robbie Grossman and Brett Phillips and these veterans in camp.
And let's be honest, this is the most individualistic team sport I think there is because it's a team sport, but you go up to the plate and it's you versus the entire team on the other side. You're the guy who's facing the pitcher. You have to do the entire at-bat on your own. You cannot rely on your teammates to go out and get a hit. You cannot rely on your teammates to make your way to first base. It's you versus the world on your own, on an island, at the plate. And that takes some mental fortitude. And so, I do become concerned. Like, on one hand, yes, young player. They got to talk to him. I mean, I have a cousin who, you know, works, I'm going to say exactly what she does wrong, and she can make fun of me. She works for a Major League Baseball organization other than the White Sox, okay? And she's a sports psychologist. She travels with the MLB team, and she's actually on the bench a lot. And she talks to guys about problems like this. Like, that's what she does. She's checking in with them. And her whole idea is just to keep their mind right. Like, that's what she does. She was like a highly decorated, really good home run hitter, college softball. But this is what she studied, and this is what she does now. She hangs around the bench. She meets with the players, and she works on these things with them because guys can become kind of head cases. I've never heard on if the White Sox have somebody like her in their organization, but teams do employ people just like her that, like, they're there to check on them. They're around while the game's going on. They're checking in with them and seeing how they're doing. They're having individual sessions with them. And because this is a mental game and you really have to think. And a young guy who was blocked, basically, and probably could play really loose, now being told you're going to be the right fielder, this hasn't been the kind of reaction that I wanted to see out of him.
No, and you do wonder, even if they don't have a sports psychologist, he is surrounded by a bunch of ex-major leaguers. You know, I mean, you got guys like Grady Sizemore sitting there who certainly have dealt with adversity and dealt with being the guy, you know, that you feel like could help a Dominic Fletcher out, you know, and sometimes it's really, too, spring training gets to guys in a way that the regular season doesn't get to them. In a way that the postseason doesn't even get to them. And sometimes you just get caught up in a small sample size and you're just not going well. And they're not really giving him a break, right? They're trying to let him hit his way out of it. I kind of suspect that if they were to send him down to start the season, they just say, you know, Robbie Grossman, he's going to start in right field for right now.
Gross.
I'm not saying for the entire season, but, you know.
I mean, it's upsetting to me. It's upsetting to me.
Without a doubt.
Even though I get what Chris Getz was doing and I understand what the plan was, if that's what starts on opening day, did you really address this out, your right field?
Well, no, but if it's for a couple of weeks to give Dominic Fletcher some at-bats at AAA, get him to get his confidence and his timing back and get out of his head, and then he comes up and does what he did with the Diamondbacks, it's a blip and we wouldn't care in the long term, right? You're going to look back on it and go, oh, remember when he was down for a couple of weeks? No, not really. Okay. But yeah, if he's going to be a head case, if it's going to be a constant battle with him, and if it's something where it persists, then you haven't solved the problem because then you might as well just throw whatever veteran you can get your hands on out there and start, you know, looking for guys.
So I think my argument back at that would be just start the kid. Just start the kid and let's see what he does. But on the other side of the coin, Lee being sent down, Pedro making a comment, I want to say within the last week, about how it's not going to be as much of what they did in spring. That isn't going to be the deciding factor on who goes. There may be a lot of guys that's already been decided they're going. It could be very interesting over the next couple weeks. I mean, pretty much everybody else has their rosters set. And a lot of announcements of, like, who's making a team have already come out around Major League Baseball.
Oh, yeah.
The Sox still have, like, 40-some guys in spring training. There's so many questions still as to what they plan on doing. And, you know, every day it's like this little trickle of these two guys were reassigned. There's not like that big clumping. It's like they can't make a decision as to what they want to do. And a lot of that comes from the fact that guys who they wanted to just grab the job and hold it didn't do it. And guys that they didn't expect, like we talked about on the last show, are blowing it up. Guys like Gavin Sheets are on fire. And I don't think he was the plan.
No, I don't think they planned on keeping him. And you still hear things like Braden Shumake, you know, has every opportunity to make the team. He might still be good for opening day with the ankle sprain. And you're sitting there going, well, wait a minute. We didn't even expect him to be on the team in the first place.
Yeah, what has he done?
Other than play defense and steal six bases, so that's literally all the guy can bring to the table because he's not doing anything at the plate. And the Sox are still sitting there considering this. And you've got, you know, the only news that I've seen is you know, you got a couple of veteran relievers that they thought might have a chance that because of shoulder injuries aren't going to be here. And that's really about it. I mean, the bullpen's unsettled. I think to a certain degree, the rotation beyond the opening series is unsettled. But we knew Crochet, Fetty, and Soroka were going to be in the rotation. We assume Nick Nastrini will start game four and Chris Flex in game five. But
I mean, I'm assuming that. Like, what do we have right now? They notice Soroka's the two.
They've announced Fetty is the three.
They haven't even figured out who their four and their five are. I really want to see Nastrini break camp. That's definitely got to be an internal discussion. Like, do you want to start his clock or do you want to keep him down for a couple of weeks? And if you do keep him down, who's going to be here for just a few weeks until you eventually bring the kid up? And then when you look at the bullpen, I just did a thing in fantasy baseball today where I put Jordan Leisure on my 40-man roster. And it was interesting. The thing that prompted me to do it was reading Scott White, who's been on this show, who's like the fantasy guru for CBS Fantasy Baseball. And he was saying Michael Kopech was the guy to grab onto if you're looking for somebody from this roster to be the closer. And I don't agree with
that. No, I disagree with that, too.
I think it's Leisure. That's why I think Kopech, it may be high level. I don't know if he's going to be the closer. And if he is, does he keep the job? Leisure looks like a natural closer. Like, he's another guy who's young. And it's like, wow, maybe they're not ready for him yet, but he sure made the case for them to get ready for him and put him in a big role in that bullpen.
Well, and it's funny because, you know, depending on where you look, now, when I go to Fangraphs, okay, Fangraphs has four guys listed with a closer role. They've got Jordan Leisure, Michael Kopech, John Brebbia, and Steven Wilson, who was the reliever that was acquired for Dylan Cease. So, you know, yeah. Scott White is sitting there anointing Michael Kopech. Fangraphs is sitting there going, it could be either these two veterans or the rookie or Kopech. And really, honestly, I mean, of those, I wouldn't be surprised if any of them got save opportunities. But I'd almost sit there and say they're going to do Leisure first out of the gate and see what the kids got, because you want to decide now, right? Or do you send him down and have him fix something if he's doing something that's not working so that he can do that in the future? Rather than Kopech, who I think is going to have to earn his way into it. And the second guy in that list is either Brebbia or Wilson. And I would almost sit there and say, you know, they'd go with one of those guys to see if they can build up some interest in them as a closer or a high leverage guy for the trade deadline, right? Because you're assuming that even though Wilson's under team control for a number of years, at age 29, they still would rather try and squeeze something else out of him if you're going to try and build up the team.
Here's the thing that I know for sure, though. I feel like this bullpen will be good. Like, there's a lot of me that looks at what they've done so far, and if they bring the right guys and they don't worry about, well, this guy's got, I think with bullpens, you always go with the hot hand.
Oh, absolutely.
I think spring really should matter when it comes to selecting your bullpen. Because we've had Don Paul on here before, former White Sox relief pitcher. And we've gone in depth with him on this before. The idea that he would have years where he felt like he had a job, years that he didn't have a job, years when he was up, years when he was down, you know, and sometimes you get off to a bad start and you're chasing it. You're sitting there going, okay, I've been bad. I got a bad ERA after a couple starts. And then you start pitching differently and it's just like quicksand and you just have a terrible year. And other years as a relief pitcher, you're just on fire and you don't even understand why you're on fire. And relief pitchers are those kind of guys. You play the hot hand. I think spring should matter a ton when selecting your bullpen. And it also speaks to why, again, it was so stupid to invest so much money in your bullpen, Rick Hahn and Kenny Williams, and I'm glad you're gone. Like, it was so stupid to do that because you can find guys. It's like that time in their career, they're in the perfect arc. And you can find guys in spring. And you can bring in, there's so many names that are possible for this bullpen. If the bullpen doesn't succeed, you have to look at whoever the decision maker was who picked this roster coming out of spring and say to them, did you go for name or did you go for who was hot? I think if they go with who's hot, I think if they go with who looks like they're ready to have a big year this year, they'll have a good bullpen.
Do you want to experience a downtown with real history, great eats and drinks, and green spaces filled with adventures? Then visit the Village of Lamont. Shop, dine, drink, explore. There's plenty of events coming up. Check out the Easter Egg Hunt on Easter Saturday. And for more information on any of their events and to check out what's upcoming, visit LamontDowntown.com.
I feel like it'll be another year where Tanner Banks doesn't make the bullpen, and you're going to go, why?
Tanner Banks is once again having a really good spring.
He's always overlooked. He's been another big spring. Every time that guy is around, he pitches well. Yeah. He does the one thing that I always want my pitchers to do, keep guys off base.
Exactly.
But he's not flashy. He doesn't have like these crazy metrics. Like, you're not sitting there looking at the way he delivers the ball and going, look at that heat or look at that nasty pitch. He's just a pitcher who somehow keeps guys off base. And he's
Exactly. You just sit there and you go, why is he not coming north? And Jordan Leisure,
he's a guy you suggested should have had an opportunity to try to compete for a starting job.
Oh, absolutely.
They didn't even pay any attention to him.
Yeah. Why not give Tanner Banks an opportunity to take the fifth starter spot? I mean, like you said, all he does is he just competes. He competes.
Is that the most maddening thing to you about sports? Because it is to me. I think after having kids that played competitive sports, right? Like my son Dominic played hockey from when he was real little all the way into high school. Now he plays water polo for Brother Rice, okay? I got my daughter Audrey who played softball. She won a state championship here in Evergreen Park at one point, hitting in the middle of the order, and eventually, because of COVID, dropped out of it because when she got to Mother Macaulay, they didn't have a freshman team that year because it was the COVID year, and they shortened their benches on the JV, and she just lost interest because they really didn't take any new kids. And, you know, I had kids, though, that played competitive sports, and they're not superstars. Trust me, none of them were going to college. None of them were getting scholarships, but they were playing. And I coach sometimes, and I would watch, not just with my kids, but with other kids. Especially when I coached, I would get girls that would come in when I was coaching my daughter's softball team, and they'd be like, I always wanted to be a catcher. And they're like 10 or 11 years old, and I'd be like, well, why aren't you a catcher? Well, because I wasn't a catcher when I was 7 years old, so they won't let me be a catcher now. And I'd be like, you're a catcher. Like, I did that with a girl. Like that's all she wanted to be. She turned out to be a pretty damn good catcher.
Because she wants to
do it. People start to pigeonhole athletes way too early. They do it with youth sports, so I think the White Sox and every other organization probably does it too. And like Tanner Banks feels like that guy who gets pigeonholed. Somebody made a decision about what Tanner was a long time ago, and it doesn't seem to matter what he does.
Right.
Like, I mean, that's one of the most maddening things about sports is that, like, some guys, if they don't have the pedigree, if they don't look like if they don't have the look, if they're not in the plans 3 years ago, it doesn't seem to matter what they've done in that time. And all I see is a guy who consistently keeps guys off base, and I would want my major league bullpen. And it just seems like he's always the guy. I'm like, where's Tanner Banks? Why isn't Tanner Banks up? Why aren't we giving this guy a shot? I mean, like, I've become one of the big Tanner Banks fans, I think, in White Sox fandom. And it's weird for me to say because he's just a relief pitcher who might have an outside chance of being a starter. Who I just go to myself, like, with all the stuff going on around this team, this guy should be given an opportunity. I want to see him out there.
And it's weird to say that about a 32-year-old journeyman, right?
I know! Like, here I am rooting for Tanner. Like, he's one of those 7-year-old kids on the team or 12-year-old kids on the team that are like, I always wanted to be this. Well, then you go ahead and try, buddy. Like, that's how I feel about Tanner.
Yeah, and meanwhile, you know, there's gnashing of teeth and rending of garments when Michael Kopech, who gets demoted.
Who's never proven it. Michael Kopech has never been as good number-wise as Tanner Banks. But look at the pedigree of Kopech, the look, the girls he dates and marries, like everything. He's like that Billy Beane thing, right? He's like, oh, he's got a pretty girlfriend. Look at the look of him. Look how big he is. Oh, yeah. He's going to be a star. And Billy Beane is sitting there in that movie, and it's also in the book they talk about that. Like, that shouldn't be the reason why you're making that choice. Let's just look at the numbers. If you took both their names off of their stat lines, you would be asking yourself, like, why didn't they give this other guy a little bit more of a chance? And why are we crying that this guy got sent to the bullpen?
Yeah, I mean, even in spring, Kopech's got an ERA of 6 and a whip of 1.44. He's not getting the job done.
He shouldn't even make the team.
No.
If his name wasn't Michael Kopech, if he wasn't part of the Chris Sale deal, he wouldn't make the team. It's the truth. He wouldn't make the team.
Absolutely not.
And people cry about it. There's so many people like, I can't believe that they're not. Can't believe he's not a starter. What a dumb decision. Oh man, they should be starting. Why?
Yeah.
What has he done that tells you that that's what he's going to be?
And that's like the Yoan Moncada truthers.
The Yoan Moncada truthers are out there telling me that one day he's going to be like he was in 2019. It's been 5 years.
5 years. See, that's the other thing, too, is that, you know, you get some of that and you sit there and you go, what? You know, why are we still advocating for this guy's future when a lot of the guys that we're talking about don't really have a future anymore? I mean, I'm sorry to say this, but Yoan Moncada he's entering. This is it. Like, this is his prime.
He won't be on the White Sox.
He's 28 years old. He
won't be on the White Sox next year. They're not going to pay him $25 million. They're going to buy him out for $5 million. He would have to go out and have a 5 or 6 WAR season for me to sit there and say that he's worth that kind of money. For the metrics to say that
right.
He's worth that kind
of
money.
Gavin Sheets has been around for a couple of years. He's 27 years old. These are not rookies who are up-and-comers.
Here's the thing with Gavin Sheets. If he makes the team, good for him. He earned it.
Absolutely.
But if 3 weeks into the season he's back to what he was last year, then it's time to release him.
Then you got
to
move on from him.
You got to move, because here's the thing. Because then it just means that he performed against lower competition in spring in the light air of Arizona, and he's a different player when you actually have to play 162 against the best of the bets in the show. So then you have to make that decision and move on.
Right, and even a guy like Dominic Fletcher, who is 26, is a little old for a prospect. He's a guy that right now, and this may be why he's pressing, he's a guy that right now is in a make or break. This team does not really have, for what everybody is claiming as a rebuild, this team does not really have a lot of guys that right now are trying to make the major league roster who are very, very young, that have very, very high future ceilings. Fletcher has a lot of potential still that we haven't seen him not reach. But Yoan Moncada hit his peak in the happy fun ball era and has fallen off ever since. Gavin Sheets was supposed to be a home run hitter who has never really hit a whole lot of home runs in the regular season, so therefore he is not what we thought he was going to be. Andrew Vaughn is probably, and Luis Robert Jr. are probably the two guys on this team that you sit there and you go, hey, look, we've got a future here, and we want to see what exactly happens to them. In the pitching level, Jordan Leisure, Nick Nastrini, those are guys that we're talking about that with. Eric Fetty's got to prove that KBO Eric Fetty is real. Frankly, the guy I'm most interested in right now, the two guys I'm most interested in on the pitching staff are Garrett Crochet, can he make that changeover, and Mike Soroka, because I want to know what they plan on doing with Mike Soroka, because he looks good this spring, right? He looks healthy. He looks like he's back to what he was before all the injuries with the Braves. Is he a guy that they want to keep around and sign long-term and try and extend, or is he trade fodder?
Well, yeah, I mean, like, that's the thing. Like, where is that point? Where's that sweet spot with Mike Soroka? If he comes out and he pitches well, and I really am a believer in him. I loved his acquisition when they...
Oh, yeah. I loved the pickup.
I did not care about anybody else that came over in that deal. You got 5 players that came over for Bummer. When you got Mike Soroka for Aaron Bummer, I said, here's a guy, it's only injuries. In my mind, he's like the pitching equivalent of Jake Berger, except he had actually accomplished more before he got injured in the majors.
To that point, Mike Soroka and Jake Berger leaned on each other because they both had Achilles injuries and were coming back from them. They're like, they're buddies. Yes. They're Achilles buddies.
they're Achilles buddies. And I think that this guy is going to be the story early on for the Sox. And he's going to be a bigger story than Garrett Crochet. I think I'll make the bold prediction right now. By the time we get to June 1st, he'll be the best pitcher statistically on the staff. I think.
Oh, yeah.
He'll be the best statistical pitcher on your staff.
He's already
and
there.
He'll be sitting there. And we'll be talking about, can Getz even get him signed now to an extension? Because at some point, he will be like, now I can make a lot of money. In the first couple of months, you see that spark with him, I'd lock him in.
Oh, yeah.
I would. I mean, like, I'd be at least having the conversation with him. I think that he'll be a storyline this year. And I watch him go out and fall flat on his face, or he'll have a foot too, like Eloy Jimenez, and he'll be day to day. And oh God, being a White Sox fan gives me no hope. Like, I try to be positive, and I immediately, as I'm saying that, Ed, I'm thinking to myself, by the time this episode comes out, Mike Soroka will have tripped over a bag of balls and his leg will be broken. That's how I feel every time I say something positive about a player.
I know, but you know what? The season really won't have kicked off in that regard until Yoan Moncada tweaks his back. So we've got that to look for.
Oh, that's coming. That's coming. Yeah, that's coming. But here's the thing. Like, I see a team, as we wrap this up today, I see a team very similarly to what we talked about in the last episode that has some guys that have really shown something this spring that I hope they're paying attention to. And there is a reason why they haven't declared their roster yet. And Pedro's talking about, well, the scouts are really good, and this is a testament to them, and that's why we don't have it. What I think is really going on is that you have some intense internal discussions where you have coaches that may want one guy, you have GM who might want another guy, you have another person that's an advisor that wants another guy, and it's not settled because there's a lot of opinions as to who they really should break camp with. And it's going to tell you a lot about the control that Chris Getz has and his vision when you see who he breaks camp with. Like, because here's the thing. I know what Rick Hahn would do. Rick Hahn would say, we have control of this guy, and I don't like DFAing anybody. So this other guy is going to make the team. So I really don't have to make a decision. I'm going to hedge my bets, keep so-and-so in the minors because they got options, and not get rid of this other guy because I can't wrap my head around the fact this guy didn't work out. And I'm curious if Chris Getz will make more of those harder decisions that Rick Hahn couldn't make.
Socks in the basement. Socks in the basement. Socks in the basement.
Socks in the basement. Heard everywhere a podcast can be found. And always on socksinthebasement.com.